The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. And as we're doing this show, there's all kinds of screens on in the studio. What's this reporter here that had to push somebody out of the way at the game last night?
You didn't see this last night?
No.
I'll get why I had to pull it in for later, but it is a CBS4 Miami reporter who was at the Golden Knights game last night who did the best example I've ever seen of the drunk fan about to get in your live shot, and she's just stiff-arming him over and over again.
Wow, good for her. Well done. We'll talk about that here momentarily. There's not much to say about the Knights' domination of the Florida Panthers. 7-2 yesterday, a touchdown. They take a 2-0 lead in the best-of-seven Stanley Cup final. And we will always have our array of guests. Drew Densick will join us, talk French Open, and obviously the NBA Finals as well. Mark Borchardt on baseball. Chrissy Andrews joins us. If you were with us yesterday, Spanky was on with us. Spanky has a new Sports Gambling Hall of Fame that already has three inductees. Billy Walters, Roxy Roxborough, Lefty Rosenthal. The Babe Ruth, the Ty Cobb, and the Walter Big Train Johnson, if you will, of the Sports Gambling Hall of Fame. Chrissy comes in today to announce the next two names. The next two names on that list. I believe a grand total of 10 inductees. I'm not sure. But we will announce inductees number 4 and 5 after Billy Walters, Roxy Roxborough, and Lefty Rosenthal today on the show. So we look forward to that. And Chrissy knew him personally, Kelly. That's the difference. He
yep.
knew them personally. So we should absolutely be appreciative of that, because one day soon we will not have that kind of contact with the legends of sports betting. That's for sure.
It's one of the, even for us that didn't know all these guys personally, but it's been a very cool part of our careers. I don't want to speak for you, but at least for my career coming out here over the past 5 years, again, just to associate with guys like Chris and Vinny and Jimmy, right? Go so far back in the history of Vegas and sports betting here, and to honor the people that came before you that did this kind of stuff is always important.
Real quick here, because we're chock full of guests, and they're going to stay with us in some cases for more than one segment, so you and I won't have much time to talk about things like the NBA draft and College World Series odds, which we will get into. We will edge into the show. But real quick, again, with the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, it does strike me, if you watch this game last night, a game filled chock full of penalty minutes, that you just go back to this arc of this postseason, and it just drives home the point of how you can beat this sport over time is just remarkable to me, if you can. Because once again, the postseason begins. It's the most random of postseasons, although Stats by Lopez says baseball is actually more random. But again, for 80% of the favorites to get through in the NHL, you'd have to play best of 51s as opposed to the best of 7s they play in the NBA historically. And you had a Florida Panthers team that was the A seed in the Eastern Conference who beat the historically great Boston Bruins. They have 65 wins in the regular season. Then the Toronto Maple Leafs, who came off their first playoff series win since 2004. And then the Carolina Hurricanes, as Andy McNeil calls them, who, again, when we went round by round and we would ask our hockey experts, like, power rank these teams, those were the ones that came up in those rounds. The Vegas Golden Knights were never that team.
Nope.
So that's also the thing that's interesting, is while people will seize on the fact that the Panthers are an 8th seed, and now you'll hear after a 2-0 deficit, a lot of folks are like, well, I mean, they're an 8th seed. They needed Pittsburgh to lose that final game, blah, blah, blah. People forgot about that in the months of April and May. Temporarily, now they're back to that. With the Vegas Golden Knights, this was a team that got off to a really hot start, along with teams like the Bruins and the Devils and the Hurricanes. But if you just went around town, nobody really thought this was going to be a great team. They were considered the most fraudulent of those great starting teams. And even when with our hockey experts, and I'm not disparaging our hockey experts because I think it's widely held,
mm-hmm.
nobody really thought this was the best team round by round either. And yet here we are now, and my mother could tell you that they were by far the better team last night.
Yeah, you got you got Jonathan Marchessault playing like he's like the Miami Heat, right, in the playoffs. He's just like scoring all the time now when he was struggling before.
And is he the Conn Smythe winner if Vegas wins this? Right now he might be.
Oh, he shifted big time. We are minus 105 on him now. Minus 105, Jack Eichel plus 425, Aiden Hill plus 500, Matthew Tkachuk 10-1.
Well, I think Will Hill has Marchessault at 34-1. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's what he has. But again, best of seven, would it shock you if all of a sudden the Panthers came back? Now, a lot of people would say, yes, it would, because they just don't appear to be that good. Bobrovsky obviously cleaned up a lot of their weaknesses through the postseason. And I mentioned this to Andy McNeil yesterday. Bobrovsky made this unbelievable save early in game one, and you're like, wow, point-blank range, they're never going to score on him. But by design, the Vegas Golden Knights have tried to figure out how to screen him and take shots from further, and it has just worked to a charm. But they're just beating the entire team at this point. We'll see what our hockey experts have to say about this on the run-up to Game 3, which is on Thursday. The Golden Knights now minus 550, $5 or north of $5 to win this series now. Florida north of $4 on the adjusted series price. You want some of that?
Sort of.
You do?
Yeah.
Kind of.
I mean.
I know. It's hockey.
I don't. Like, it's hockey, right?
Yeah, it's
like,
hockey.
I know. Like, me and you talk about this, and look, there might just be some of this stuff we just don't get, but it feels like so. This sports feels so random.
Rando.
Sometimes. And you're telling me I get 4-1 on a dog?
The thing is, you can't convince me differently after all these years. You know, it just. We'll see what folks. By the way, the Panthers are minus 120 favorites in game number three. So they are slight favorites to get off the schneid and at least do what they have to do in game three to keep this interesting. Let's start there. The other thing is I never miss an opportunity on this show because I know we're all so focused on sports betting, super close to the sun on sports betting. And this does have a sports betting element to it. But whenever nerdy baseball stuff collides with sports betting, I love it. And back in the day, I don't know if people have listened to this show long enough remember when, I don't know who it was back in 2017 or 2018, we were talking about MVP, and someone was flirting with something historically. I want to say with the Triple Crown. It never happened. But the point I was making back then was, in 2012, when Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, most home runs, RBI, and average, best batting average in the American League, there was this debate, there was a hot debate in baseball circles, who should win MVP? Should it be Cabrera, who won the Triple Crown, or should it be Mike Trout, who in all kinds of newfangled metrics, newfangled for most, for those of us who bet baseball for a while, it wasn't so newfangled for us, but WAR and weighted on base and that kind of thing, should he have gotten the MVP? And my point at that time was, it had been 45 years since 1967 when Carl Yastrzemski won the Triple Crown. He won it in the American League for the Boston Red Sox. And if you are a baseball purist or someone who follows the sport of baseball, the Triple Crown held this mythical status for all of those 45 years. And my point was, in 2012, when Miguel Cabrera finally did it after that long of a wait, 4.5 decades, you had to give him the MVP. Now, the next year, when it was a Cabrera-Trout debate in 2013, then you can put in your, and no one loves analytics more than I do, then you can sort of use that as justification for Trout. But if you've talked about something that didn't happen for 45 years as this hallowed thing, a Triple Crown, however arbitrary one might decide that is, it was something really valued in baseball circles, so you had to give it to Miguel Cabrera. Enter the year 2023, and we have the curious case, Kelly Binlin, of Luis Arraez of the Miami Marlins. The Marlins, who are 3 games above .500, against all sort of conventional wisdom, a lot of that having to do with their record in one-run games. But Arraez got his batting average on a 3-for-4 day yesterday that included a two-bagger to .399. That's the best over the first 61 games since 2008 and Chipper Jones. Now, the question becomes with this, is 75-1 on him worth a bet in the National League MVP race, which right now has Ronald Acuna Jr. as the short shot to win that, of the Atlanta Braves, of course. And by the way, the people at the top are, you know, on teams, the usual suspects, Acuna Jr., Freddie Freeman of the Dodgers, Mookie Betts of the Dodgers, even Pete Alonso, who has the most home runs in Major League Baseball, and I believe is second in RBI in the National League. Pete Alonso there at 14-1. But you see, way down there is Arraez at 75-1. And so the question becomes, is that worth a bet? The point I'm getting at is no one has hit 400 in Major League Baseball since Ted Williams, who literally wrote the book, The Science of Hitting. No one has hit 400 since 1941 when Ted Williams hit 406. Now, we have had flirtations with this in the past. Most notably, when I was a kid, in 1977, Rod Carew hit 388, and in 1980, George Brett hit 390. If you collected baseball cards as a kid back then, you'll remember those. We thought those cards would be you know, priceless forever. Didn't work out that way, the baseball card market. But anyway, both of those guys won MVP awards back then. Since then, however, the nature of the game has obviously taken many a turn. We've had a steroid era where guys who did have huge batting averages didn't get the MVP. So in the case of, you know, Chipper Jones, who ended up hitting, well, first of all, Tony Gwynn, 1994, strike shortened year, he hit 394. That's the closest player who's ever gotten to 400 since then. He did not win the MVP, and yes, they did give out the MVP that year. I mentioned before, Larry Walker, I did not mention, Larry Walker, 1999, hit 379. He did not win the MVP that year. The best average through 61 games since Ted Williams hit 400 in 1941. Chipper Jones in 2008, 418. Larry Walker in 97, 416. Paul O'Neill, 1994, 411. Rod Carew, 1983, 411. Stan Musial, 1948, 408. On and on. Luis Arraez has the 10th highest batting average currently of anybody through 61 games since Ted Williams did it. And so the point on the 75-1 I want to mention is you've got to overcome two things. One, you got to figure, can he get to 400? And the point is that mathematically, none of those guys I just mentioned did. Mathematically, it is very unlikely for him to do so. And even if you believed it, even if you believed, you know what, Gil, I do think more than one out of 75 times the rest of the way, Luis Arraez, if I ran it through a simulation, would hit 400 when all is said and done. Then you would have to get to the part about human beings actually saying, yes, hitting the hallowed 400 would actually get them to vote for him in this day and age. And I think because you have both of those two uncertainties, I actually don't think 75-1 is a good bet. Give me double that before I actually bet it.
Golf breaking news on the other side. Major, major news.
Coming up next, Numbers Game. Beeson.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and sign up, or stop by, I should say, any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Big breaking news in the sport of golf. Kelly, what you got?
Yeah, this just coming down in about the past 15 minutes. PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and DP World Tour merging commercial operations under common ownership, Gil. So the separation we've seen in the golf world apparently coming to an end. This will mutually agreed upon all pending litigation between the participating parties. All will be dropped. Further, the three organizations work cooperatively and in good faith to establish a fair and objective process for any players who desire to reapply for membership with the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour following the completion of the 2023 season. So there's a lot to sift through here. There is a large press release that just came out and stories coming out, but this makes some sense of why Rory had been quiet about talking LIV the past couple weeks and why Phil Mickelson has been very active on Twitter the past couple days. So it appears, at least for now, that the PGA Tour LIV separation is coming to an end.
Which, from a pure golf fan standpoint, is awesome. Because and nobody was watching LIV. And besides majors, we didn't get to have the full pool of golfers in weekly tournaments. From a betting standpoint, though, as I asked you about when they separated, you were like, well, no, doesn't matter. But like, does this make it more fun for you, more difficult for you as a bettor?
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's great.
It's awesome.
I think it's great for betting to have all these guys back. Yeah. Now, I think the how we got to a point where there was a separation and now we're all back together now.
Well, so
it's seemingly happy. It's a little odd to me, but
just coming down now. So all these guys who took all that money, do they get to keep all that money?
These are a lot. There's a lot of questions we're all going to have that need to be answered.
First thing I want to know, right? These guys get to keep their $100 million or their $70 million or their whatever at this point. That's the first question. Because if that's the case, man, did they make out.
I would assume so, but I don't know. I don't know.
And then, you know, them coming back, I guess, you want to say, hey, how will they be received? I think most people, it'll be water under the bridge.
Yeah, most of them might.
It'll
it's
just
not gonna
be business as usual.
Yeah, most of them it's not going to be an issue.
Nobody's gonna ice out anybody. But that's huge news. And the DP tour, by the way, there's going to be a portion of the audience that are like, what's the DP tour? That's the European tour.
Mm-hmm.
So massive for the sport of golf. From a betting perspective, back to mainly, besides the DP part, mainly how it was with these tournaments. But again, what you said there is key. A fair way of those guys also getting back into the PGA Tour itself.
Yeah, which that was always going to be an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the major thing here is...
They don't want lawsuits.
Right.
People are tired of lawyers.
It's dropping all the lawsuits. Yeah. But, you know, the PGA Tour came out pretty aggressive against the Saudi-backed public investment fund, which they are now apparently completely merging with.
Yeah.
So that's something.
That's for another show. That's just, yeah. That's a whole topic of, you know, and then everybody can have the, what's the next argument that people make? Well, I mean, the PGA Tour itself was being played on courses that used to be historically, you know, all that stuff. Drew Dinsick joins us, everybody, from not only the Deep Dive podcast, but also NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. Dinsick Classic, newfangled Dinsick. You can follow him on Twitter at whale_capper. It's like classic Coke and new Coke. How you doing, man?
I'm just trying to figure out what the newfangled golf tour is going to be called and what it's going to look like. And yeah, this is a crazy, surprising news this morning. And I'm not a golf guy, really. I don't have an edge betting golf. I feel like we were starting to find something with the idea that these LIV guys were playing less golf and in better form at the majors versus the rest of the tour, who was kind of being ground into a fine dust with these elevated events kind of over the first half of the calendar. And I guess, I mean, ultimately, that the stress that must have existed with the top, you know, keeping the top players on tour and playing this aggressive schedule and then getting beaten by the likes of the Brooks Koepkas of the world and the at the Masters and at the PGA Championships was unsustainable, apparently. And it was always going to be tough for the PGA Tour to compete with as much money as LIV, as the Saudis were willing to throw at LIV, especially when you're a quote unquote nonprofit entity. And now all that goes away, and presumably the product for the fans gets better. But it's been a while since I was really entertained into golf, and it's funny because I'm aging into that kind of demographic. So they may be recognizing that they have a little bit of an issue on their hands.
Maybe. And one thing we said, well, we can leave it at this, but the one thing, no matter all the disparaging remarks can be made about LIV, but the one or two things that they did do is they forced more, they got more money to be paid to PGA golfers per tournament, and the notion that some of these events were going to be mandatory to be played, right? The elevated events. So those two developments are pretty awesome for the sport of golf, and I think even the biggest cynic would have to acknowledge that part of it. Now, the part about how, because in the press release it says, oh, we want to applaud them for bringing the team concept of golf. God, I hope that doesn't catch on. You know, like
no doubt.
Yeah, I don't want that happening. Okay. Yeah. What about tennis? We'll get to the NBA finals. Have you had an edge in this French Open?
No. I'm going to lose.
I have not either. Yes.
Yeah. There's very, very few outs for me at this point to come out ahead. Even though it's especially tilting because I had Sabalenka and Mukova, and yet here I am, and that's one of your semifinals, and I'm looking at a losing book here. So,
if you hit your futures, though, do you win if you hit your futures?
Yeah, I have to hit. I have to basically thread the needle and hit everything. Though I have to hit Djokovic and Sabalenka, right now Djokovic down 1-0 to a very informed Karin Khachanov. So it's going to be a long day for me.
Yeah, if the futures hit, if Iga and Carlos hit, then it's kind of water under the bridge, and it's actually a winner. But match by match, it has been a down tournament. Nothing disastrous, but really for me, it was day one was a disaster. And then it's kind of been like just treading water the whole way through. Do you have anything in terms of what is already lined for tomorrow, the second part of the quarterfinals?
Well, we could talk about today even.
Please.
We're going to get a late start for Alcaraz Tsitsipas. This is probably the most interesting match outside of if we do get Alcaraz Djokovic. This is one of the more interesting matches we're going to have all tournament because Tsitsipas has typically been sort of the, you know, Alcaraz's pigeon. He's been, you know, Alcaraz has kind of picked him apart, picked his game apart, never really been frustrated by him in any of their head-to-heads. You particularly look at what Alcaraz did to him in Barcelona this year. Barcelona, really, really similar conditions in terms of court speed and ball to what we have at Roland Garros. So it's kind of your best analog. And Alcaraz just completely, you know, no contest at him effectively. And it's, you know, that he's been doing that to a lot of players. But for what it's worth, everything we've seen from Tsitsipas in the year 2023, he's taken his game a step forward in this tournament. The degree to which he is finding winners and avoiding errors is like mind-meltingly impossible. And yes, maybe regression is due and he's going to be an unforced error machine today. That's entirely possible. But it's been very, very impressive seeing Tsitsipas continue to evolve his game and get even better. And I think Alcaraz is due for a pretty tough contest. I think this is going to go five sets. I have Alcaraz 3-2 is my most likely outcome here. And I think the over is a bet. I think sets, you know, to go the distance is a play. And I think Tsitsipas to win at least two sets is a good bet. And most of this is just kind of believing in what I'm seeing from his form to this point in the tournament, even though, you know, neither guy has been especially tested in terms of degree of competition or, you know, really been asked to do much. It still has been just extremely impressive watching both of them kind of perform at this level. And this is a pretty high stakes match. And you know, especially if something happens to Djokovic in the early match here, this ultimately turns into your de facto final,
yes.
As far as I could tell you, which is amazing to say, but that added pressure to, you know, into the cauldron makes it even more likely it's going to go over in my mind. So that's kind of a qualitative angle, but yeah, overs for me in Alcaraz Tsitsipas. And, you know, I'm coming off of very, very confident, heavy staking on the over in the Alcaraz Musetti match, which was dead on arrival. And it's tough to go back to the Alcaraz over well, but I just, you know, the margin between these two players is going to be pretty narrow. And if Tsitsipas can produce the type of aggressive winning tennis that we've seen to this point in the tournament, then he's going to win some sets.
All right. 35.5 is the total in that right now. Drew likes that to go over, also likes Tsitsipas to win two sets, not Tsitsipas plus the games. You're not playing that.
No, I think the fabric of the sets could be a little bit tricky to thread the needle with games, but sets looks bettable to me.
Okay, we'll see if Drew has anything tomorrow, including Iga and Coco playing in their quarterfinal tomorrow after Iga got through by withdrawal of Leslie Azarenka yesterday in the NBA Finals. Game number 3, knotted up at one game apiece. What does he think now with the Heat and the Nuggets? That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Take your sports betting game to the next level this summer with the VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now for only $9.99 and get access to everything we do, including daily pro picks on all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and pro tools like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Start betting smarter. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and sign up now. We get tweets at Beating the Book, but I want to isolate the Live PGA merger ones. And by the way, if you're just joining us, that's the big news of the morning. The PGA Tours and the Live Golf Tours are merging. Trip Tepper, PGA Tour knew they were going to lose and lose big in court. Big win for LIV, Live, who disrupted a sport and ultimately, quote unquote, won. I'm not smart enough to speculate on the legal ramifications of who would have won and who wouldn't have, but absolutely, I believe Liv won, quote unquote, for sure. D. Mark B. makes it about politics. He says, so basically the Saudis funneled all the money they could to Trump through Liv, and now they don't need it anymore. That's what he says. Chris Felica, the bear from Fox. Are you familiar with Chris Felica's work?
I've heard of him.
Basically, this is Chris talking. Basically, I'm interpreting this as PGA knew Liv wasn't going anywhere, and Liv knew nobody watches their events. So they finally, quote-unquote, figured it out. Whether that's right or not, I don't know. I'd also anticipate quite a few events going away.
I think I agree with all that. That is, I think we finally hit a standstill.
Here's the real thing, and you and I were talking about this off-air. Because I brought up, do all those golfers who went get to keep all their money? And if so, imagine how you feel now if you're one of these PGA golfers who didn't go, who didn't take the money. You found out, you basically said, I am on principle, I'm standing, I am not going to take all of these offers. Not everybody got an offer, but a lot did who turned them down. Those guys took it. Those guys, I guess, we're speculating now because we don't know, I get to keep at least some huge portion, if not all of their money. And now I find out that the tour that I supported, that I was super loyal to, turned around and made a deal with Liv behind my back. And as you pointed out, Kelly, a lot of people are finding out on Twitter.
Yeah, Rick Gaiman tweeting, who does some, he's been on the show with us before, does great golf work, both betting and for CBS Sports. He tweeted, initial feedback from tour players are, quote, not happy.
Not happy.
A lot of them finding out live on Twitter. Colin Morikawa tweeting about it right now. They are finding out just like we are live on Twitter about this. And everything you just ran down, all the cash they passed up, changed schedules to defend the tour.
Bro.
Defend the shield, as we would say with the NFL.
Oh, the drama.
And then welcome back.
Soap opera. It's a telenovela happening in the golf tour. Drew Dinsick joins us once again. He's ready for a telenovela. Look at the guy. Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. In another life, maybe he would have been on Below Deck. Maybe he would have been in a telenovela. We don't know. So anything else on tennis tomorrow before we get to your NBA Finals thoughts? Iga Coco specifically. Anything there?
Yeah. I played two sides in the women's side tomorrow. I like Jabeur 2-0, and I laid the seven games with Iga at +131.
There you go.
Don't think that is a competitive contest. I don't think either is a competitive contest. Jabeur Beatriz might be fun for the first set, but I think the fatigue that Beatriz Haddad Maia suffered at the hands of her fourth round, just absolute war. It went 3+ hours. I think that's going to be a little bit too much to overcome, considering the kind of variety in Jabeur's game, her ability to move Beatriz around the court. I think, honestly, the Jabeur drop shot is going to be unbeatable.
The golden age of the drop shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And her touch is just, it's so cool to watch. And I don't think Beatriz really stands much of a chance. Similarly, Iga is building into an unstoppable force. I mean, you know, the superlatives about the way she's getting through these matches, you can't say enough.
Just to give you
she continues to get better.
A sense of the timing. Iga Swiatek, now with the withdrawal yesterday, has spent 13 minutes more on court in this tournament than Beatriz Haddad Maia spent on court just yesterday.
What?
13 minutes in the whole tournament more than Haddad Maia.
It's ridiculous.
Who's not her
opponent. Been pretty hot, too. So, yeah. And they've been playing a lot of these matches in the day, at least on the women's side. So, yeah, huge disparity.
A lot of people, not a lot of people, but a few people have asked me, would I take Iga to have a bagel set? Because she's had, you know, four bagel sets in three matches, essentially, to this point. My answer is no, I wouldn't lay the number on her bageling. Bageling is just so difficult. The fact that she's done it so frequently is just, I mean, could she? Of course, but I wouldn't bet on that to happen against Coco, even though I think it'll be a rout. Anything on the men's side real quick?
I think the men's prices are actually pretty fair. I was hopeful to get a price in the +300 range on Etcheverry, but market's pretty wise to that one, I think. Yeah. And then similarly, I thought you could catch Root at a dog price. Coming up against Rune, who played really physical match yesterday, and you know, is in general looks like he's struggling a bit with fitness. But Rune is the is the small favorite there. So market got those two right on the men's side, and I think we probably see a Rude Zverev semifinal. Not that I really am excited to watch that one, but that's the bottom half. It's kind of the. We knew it was an imbalanced draw coming into this. And I think you're looking at your runner up as whoever comes out of that mess of four players left.
Okay. NBA finals, by the way, Djokovic down a set, Drew was saying earlier, not just 1-0, but down a set. They're on serve in the second set, Djokovic and Karen Khachanov. NBA finals. So we're in this 2-day period where there's no games, no hockey or basketball tonight. As a matter of fact, NBA finals resumes tomorrow night in Miami. Series tied up at one game apiece. Obviously, we talked about it extensively yesterday where the 3-point shooting was just unbelievable. Djokovic only had 4 assists. Those were the big headlines, including the fact that the Heat actually got, instead of having just 2 free throw attempts as they did in game 1, they actually had 20 attempts in game 2. That helped as well. So those were the 3 probably biggest headlines, I would imagine. I might be forgetting one. Do you take that, though, as your takeaway of, oh, the Heat are legit contenders to win this series after what I saw in Game 2? Or was your takeaway, man, everything had to just be perfect, especially that 3-point shooting had to be through the roof for them to win even that game. Where do you stand here? Heat are plus 225 on the adjusted series price.
Yeah, I'm having an extremely difficult time finding any kind of edge in the series. I don't really understand what happened in games one and games two. Denver should have won game one by 20 and would have should have won game two by 8-10. And yet the Heat are finding ways in the fourth quarter to outplay them. And I am not seeing it with my eyes. I'm not seeing it with the numbers. I don't really understand how any of this is happening. So I'm kind of basically sitting on my hands here, hoping to see something at some point that gives me any kind of interest or edge at all in this series. Cause right now I'm just sort of on the sidelines.
My thing yesterday was, if anything, I liked the under in game three because there was only 90, 91 possessions, I believe. And it barely got over. And that was, you know, the Heat just having this unbelievable percentage volume and percentage of made threes. And so my instinct was the under. Is that a proper instinct, or is the Heat strategy here to just take the air out of the ball? And so, you know, if that's the case, I mean, in one respect, that really just does actually buttress what I'm saying. And you're just hoping for, you know, not a huge 3-point shooting affair and that the Nuggets won't be able to increase that pace.
Yeah. I mean, I had a small stake on the over in game two, and my reaction watching it live and seeing the pace that you mentioned in first, second, and third quarter was, this isn't even going to sniff 219 mm-hmm. or 216 or whatever it was. I was like, this is a dead nut under. And sure enough, it manages to go over. And this is kind of in keeping with sort of the disbelief or not sure what I'm seeing. Like, the Nuggets defense has issues, surely. Like, there's ways to attack it, but the Heat aren't even really necessarily getting to the soft spots of the defense. The Nuggets are just kind of playing sloppy. They're giving them just all kinds of really, really awful high quality defense. Looks.
Yeah.
Just high quality looks all over the place. And with the length that they have and the personnel that is on the floor, like, it doesn't really make sense. I saw it in game one for sure, and it didn't ultimately matter, and I thought they would tighten it up for game two, but it was almost worse. The Nuggets schematically apparently, and just from an effort standpoint, have an issue defensively, which keeping me from getting involved in an under, even with the total being kind of high for as few possessions as we're expecting here. And I guess I'm sitting here hoping the Heat managed to find a way to win game three with the Nuggets not exercising any of their adjustment potential, right? If they just kind of Nuggets kind of roll in like, oh yeah, well, we're favored, we're the better team, like they did for the majority of the Lakers series, which ultimately didn't cost them. But if they, you know, if they do that and they go down 2-1 in this series to the Heat and, you know, have to really kind of go to the drawing board and come up with some schematic adjustments for game four, then, you know, I may get involved with them for the series. But as it stands right now, I'm struggling to find any reason to even tune in because the games have not been good. I don't understand these teams, especially the Heat. And so it hasn't been a great betting experience for me personally, but you guys out there winning.
I mentioned this before when you said your hope was for the Heat to win game one and sort of employ that same strategy, which is, in theory, we can say it here statically on a weekday morning. I trust you that you would follow through with it. I wonder what percentage of the audience would be able to, if they saw the Heat win, still then go against them. Drew, I appreciate it. I got to run. Thank you, brother.
Best of luck, guys.
At @whale_capper, Drew Dinsick will come back. NBA MVP talk next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, authorized gaming partner of the NBA, hits the court with a special playoff parlay insurance offer. Place the same game parlay of four legs or more and get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss one leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back a $25 bonus bet if one leg in your same game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Camera's not usually on me when I read those promos, Kelly. It's very disconcerting. All eyes on me. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Here's the thing. We're talking about all our bets in tennis and in the NBA finals, or at least tossing those around. You know what everyone wants to talk about this morning is PGA and LIV. And that is certainly the case on Twitter. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from Jason Stark. He said, hey, Gil, LIV accomplished what the AFL and ABA did in under 2 years. LIV wins bigly. Jesse Welch, pardon me. Listen, if the PGA is smart about this, they should 100% market this up and make some kind of head-to-head tournaments with former LIV livers versus PGA stayers. Jack Hannon, big winner in the golf mergers. The fans, I agree with that. Koepka not playing in the Ryder Cup would have been a travesty. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that for sure. Chris Velika was tweeting in for us, the bear from Fox Sports. So we just decided, Kelly, didn't we? We were like, hey, if he's tweeting, might as well just have him on the show. Chris Velika joins us now from Connecticut, his abode. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. I was wondering if you were going to go Tupac on me with the All Eyes on Me at the start of the segment there.
Might have entered my brain for a second. You have some detailed thoughts on this, don't you, on the merger here?
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, obviously the devil's going to be in the details when you read everything, but my first thought is I guess it ultimately came to a point where PGA Tour understood that they're not going away. They're going to be here, and some of the best players in the world are going to be over there. And LIV realized we have a player who just won the PGA, was runner-up in the Masters, and Phil was runner-up in the Masters, and nobody's watching our tour. So, like, okay, let's finally get together. Let's figure this out finally. So I think that was my immediate reaction to it. And then you kind of sit and you pause and you think about it a little bit. And you're like, okay, does this mean that maybe a good number of events now are going to go away? Because you're really just going to have one huge world tour. But then you think about it again, you're like, with so many golfers out there, you really just can't have events go away. So are you going to get some type of like dual tier deal, like maybe what you had with the Korn Ferry Tour, where like you're going to have these elevated events where maybe you have the top 100 players in the world or players that qualify for these events playing. And then you have the non-elevated event with people who are maybe outside the top 100, and you can work your way into different events throughout the year. So those were the couple of thoughts that I immediately had when I read the surprising news. And then the other biggest news that I saw was again, how players were in the dark on this. You see Colin Morikawa, Morikawa tweeting like, interesting finding out golf news on Twitter again. Like, it's total ridiculous how they were able to keep this under wrap. And I think it just goes to show how surprising of a deal this was.
Those LIV golfers must be texting each other, just pumping their fists. They won it every which way.
Mm-hmm. They did. And I was never one of those, I hate LIV, I hate all the players that went over there. They made a decision for themselves to better their career, whether it was in terms of finances, longevity, whatever it was. And you can't deprive them that. And they came out and they took a stance and did whatever they did. And ultimately, the PGA probably was the one who kind of was the instigator in this, if you want to merger, or whatever you're ultimately going to call it, right? We're realizing they're not going anywhere. Do we want to continue treating this in an unamicable way, especially now seeing the resurgence of a healthy Brooks Koepka and Phil playing so well, making the cut in both majors as well.
Yeah, historically, we'll look back on this as a blip. I really believe that. But yet this blip was so enriching for so many. And LIV did ultimately win. And I will just say this again. And they got some, they kind of proved a point. The PGA wasn't giving the golfers enough money in some of these events. And so at least that was their biggest impact beyond just enriching individual players. Have you made U.S. Open golf bets, by the way, Chris?
I made one U.S. Open bet. And that was a player who I normally don't play in majors because he's usually over bet and he's kind of a hype player. And I should take it back. I bet on him once in a major, and that was at the Masters the year Tiger wound up winning. I bet Patrick Cantlay. It's a West Coast LA based course. He's a California guy. So I think the conditions out there and the climate's gonna be a little bit shorter of a course. I think he may not feel as much pressure or have as much difficulty with some of the traditional major courses. So I took a shot with Cantley. I think I got him at 16-1, which isn't the greatest price, but I figured this could be. I went back and looked, and I'm like, you know what? For all the grief that I've given him about people betting on him and him really never going to be a major champion, go back his recent run in majors, he's played pretty well. He's got a bunch of top 10s and top 15s. So this probably will be his best chance to win a major. So I took a chance with Cantley, and I'm sure I'll wind up having a Scheffler ticket and a Rahm ticket as well. And I know that you're cutting your profit in half, but I'll wait and see how the first round goes and then go from there.
Oh, we'll all wind up with a Scheffler ticket, that's for sure.
Yes, we will.
What else? The beauty of having you on is you're always betting on all kinds of random stuff as well. What do you have in pocket? What could you recommend to folks just throughout the sports betting landscape right now? Because you're betting tennis, betting College World Series. What do you got?
I you're probably not going to like the bet that I made this morning. I actually took Stefanos Tsitsipas plus the 6.5 games against Alcaraz. It was minus 130 just because Alcaraz was redlining everything the other day, and he was fantastic. So his level might drop a little bit, and Tsitsipas has played really, really well. He's won in straight sets, and some of them have been long. He's always going to find his way, I think, to get at least one set to a tiebreak, maybe two. So I think getting Tsitsipas plus 6.5 games, I think that's something that I liked. I did have a bet earlier this morning as well, obviously before I knew I was coming on. I didn't tweet it out, but sorry. But I took Khachatov to win a set here as well against Djokovic, and he won a set, and they're on serve here in the second. And I'm already looking forward to Champions League final on Saturday, and got the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, and you got USFL on Saturday. So it's another big day of wagering. I'm going to look, I think, at the draw in the Champions League final between Inter Milan and Manchester City. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Manchester City. They mean, best team in the world, won the FA Cup, they won the Prem, but they were chasing all year in the Prem. They finally caught Arsenal and surpassed them and held on. You won the FA Cup in a really good match last week. Now the pressure to complete the treble is on. And you're going into a team in Inter that has a world-class midfield, and that's the one area that you really need to be strong at when you're facing City, because you need to control some of the ball. And we saw Manchester United, I think, have a lot of the ball on Saturday. They had some really good chances. So I think Inter can kind of slow this game down, be at the pace. I think the last three finals have all been 1-0, if I'm 1-0 or 2-0. So you've had a tendency to see lower scoring games. And I think Inter can hang in there. So I'm going to take a swipe with the draw. I think I saw somewhere around 350 or so, if my mind is not mistaking me. So that's what I'm going to be.
Okay.
It's funny too, because I got my Serie A team is AC Milan, my Prem team is Liverpool. So I kind of got their two biggest rivals going against each other on Saturday. So going to be kind of disheartening to watch.
We'll have you back later in the week to discuss the Belmont, the third leg of the Triple Crown. But give me 30 seconds on that. What are your thoughts?
Well, the draw is coming up shortly. It's going to be interesting because I think you're going to see Forte probably go favored, maybe Age of Empire, short second choice. But I'm looking at Tappet Trice, and I'm looking at Hit Show, two horses that ran in the Derby, skipped the Preakness, now going to be running in the Belmont. We've seen this. We've talked about it before with Todd Pletcher, has that horse that wins the Tampa Derby, runs okay in the Kentucky Derby, skips, and then is poised for a big effort on Saturday in the Belmont. So I think Tappet Trice or Hit Show are going to be the two horses that I'm going to be looking at on Saturday.
Tappet Trice or Hit Show. Preliminary Belmont thoughts from Chris Velika. Always nice to have you drop by. Appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Of course. Good to talk to you.
Chris,
be well.
Chris Velika from Fox Sports, everybody. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Velika, FALLICA. And who knows? Maybe some of the things he talked about with the merger could happen as well. Time will reveal, as DeBarge once said back in the day. We'll come back. Baseball with Mark Borchardt. His thoughts on my Luis Arraez non-bet. Also thoughts beyond that in the sport of baseball. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.